Hello once again. Welcome back to Vox Pop, WAMC's live afternoon call-in talk show. I'm Ray Graff, your host for the afternoon. The number to call is 800-348-2551, 1-800-348-2551. We're talking automotive maintenance and repair this afternoon with none other than Gordon Fricke, owner and operator of Barber & Fricke Automotive Incorporated in Hoosick Falls, New York. Gordon has been in the automotive repair and service game for over 30 years, and it's no game to him. He knows his stuff, and if you have a question, get in early today. 1-800-348-2551. You can also post comments at the bottom of today's show page on the Vox Pop section of our website, wamc.org/voxpop. Or you can comment on our wall post on Facebook, facebook.com/WAMC Radio. Or you can tweet your questions and comments at WAMC Vox Pop. Or you can email us. You can do that too, voxpop@wamc.org. But give us a call by all means. 800-348-2551 is the number. Hello, Gordon. How are you?
Hello, Ray. Good, good. How are you?
It's almost that horrible driving time of the year. And as we were talking before the show started, people really haven't panicked yet.
Now, it's been so warm for so long. The weather's been incredibly mild. And myself included, I have just delayed a lot of winter preparations.
Yeah.
Doing things around the house. I've just have people really thinking about tires, snow tires, getting cars ready for winter.
Is there an issue where, you know, the first snow hits and then you lose stock and you have to wait for new stock to arrive?
Well, not really. You know, cars, there's a lot more all-wheel drive and four-wheel drive. I think the snow tire changeover is not as great an ordeal as it maybe was 20 years ago. You still have a group of people that are going to get either new all season or winter tires, but I think more people are either putting it off or getting by with better traction cars to begin with.
Front wheel drive has helped. The old days,
yeah,
you could donut and everything else in a parking lot.
Well, think of those days. You had a rear wheel drive car, a big giant engine up front, and those cars were terrible in the snow. So you had to get snow tires, and you had to put weight in the trunk in a lot of cases.
We did that, and it studded tires too.
Absolutely.
And it worked really, really well.
Yep. Yeah, you can still get studded tires.
Are they still legal in New York?
Yes. Yep. You have to have them on and off within certain dates. But I have a handful of people that, in fact, we've already put two sets on two people the same family's cars. We did them last week, studded tires already.
Now, the tires come that way. You don't put the studs in the tires,
you know,
do you?
You can stud them yourselves. I don't. I never got the studding
equipment. You have a gun that would do it?
Yeah. There's a gun that actually shoots them in pneumatically. And what you're seeing is just a little teeny tip of the stud. The thing goes in the tire at least 3/8, maybe of an inch.
Now, if you run over a screw or a nail, as we have all done, you can pop your tire. It must be a delicate science putting those studs in
the
tire.
Well, the studs have a head on the other end that's larger, so they'll only go in so far. So you don't have to worry about shooting them through the tire.
Fair enough. Let's get right to the phones at 800-348-2551. Gordon Fricke, our guest. Connie and Leverett, you're first. Hello, Connie. Hey, let's
Claire.
Oh, hello.
Claire.
You're there. Hi. Oh, it's Claire. I'm sorry. Hi, Claire.
Right.
Sure.
Hi. Thank you for taking my call. I have a 2000 Buick LeSabre. It has 33,000 miles on it, and only the right side of the heater works. Left side does not work at all. Now, this is my second Buick, and I had the same problem with the previous one.
Sure, Claire. Does your car, and I'm assuming it might have driver and passenger side heater controls. You can adjust either side independently.
No.
Yours does not.
Right.
So when you say no heat, is it no airflow at all, or you're not getting
cold.
Warm air?
I'm getting cold air.
And the passenger side of the car is getting warm air.
Right. Slightly. It isn't too warm.
Even on the passenger side?
Right. Now, Mr. Fricke, I've had this car into several garages, and no one, I've had the radiator flushed, and no one can help me.
Your car probably does not have a temperature gauge on the dashboard, does it?
No.
Okay. What I always ask people, if it's a heat-related question, is where is your temperature gauge usually running, if you have one? And if nobody pays attention to it, do that first and see if it's in the normal zone. So what I'm getting at there is there's a device in the engine called the thermostat, and it controls the temperature of the engine's cooling water, and that coolant goes through the heater, and that's where you get your heat inside the car from. If the engine's running too cold, you're not going to get much heat inside of the car. So it has to be established that the temperature of the water is normal. Then you need to see if the amount of water flowing through the heater core inside the car is adequate. And then the question becomes the controls. There's little flaps and doors inside the dashboard that changes the location of where the air blows, if you want it only on your feet or if you want it to defrost just the windshield.
I push that. Excuse me. I do push that.
Which one?
On the right, the flaps.
So you're directing the air?
Towards the inside of the car.
Yeah. Here's what we see happening. On an older car, the heater core can get clogged partially. And even if you flush the radiator or the engine, the mechanic needs to take special care to also flush the heater core itself out. And a lot of times you can do that without any disassembly, really, just removing the hoses and putting water through it in two directions.
Can I do that?
Pardon me?
Or must I have a mechanic?
You'd want to have a shop do that because they have to they want to disconnect the heater hoses and flush it with water either way, and somebody's going to have to make sure you got the right temperature water and the right amount of flow. Then
I'm going to tell them. Yeah.
Then they're going to want to be concerned with the controls inside the car that are directing the heat, the air temperature controller or the there's a door that diverts the hot and cold air, the blend door. So it can get a little complicated.
Does the defroster work on that by any chance?
Yep. It does work.
Does it give you hot air to the windshield?
Just on the right side.
Still just on the right, yes. Okay. So something going on inside your heater housing.
Now, excuse me for interrupting, but can you recommend it without going to Urine Little Falls or who's it for?
Yes.
I don't think we should get in the business of recommending actual people.
Yeah.
I don't think it's a good plan.
No, and I wouldn't know where to send her.
I'm going to take a drive to Hoosick Falls.
Oh,
right.
Well, all right. I can't say no to that. Hey, Claire, thanks a lot for the call. Let's go to Connie in Leverett. Connie, now you're on. Hello.
Hi, how you doing?
Good.
I'm wondering, I'm helping a friend buy a used car, and she's going to buy something with either 50,000 plus miles on it, and actually there's a car with 90,000 miles that I know the owner, and they just had new brakes and things. I'm wondering, I think there's like the list of five things that happen that you need to do, like replace the timing belt and the water pump, and I'm wondering what are other expensive things for a high mileage car. Now, this is a good car. It's a Toyota. But what are like that laundry list that you really need to check on a high mileage car if you're buying it used?
Sure. Can you tell me the model of the car in question?
Mm-hmm.
And in a year?
It's a Toyota Avalon.
What year is it?
It's a 1990.
Okay.
We know the owner who is very fastidious.
Sure. One thing of major concern on a car of that age, even though the miles might be relatively low, would be rust. And primarily, you may not be seeing anything on the body on the outside, but we get really concerned with the underside of the car, the lines, the brake lines, the fuel lines.
Okay.
And it becomes somewhat, you have to question the structure of the car, the suspension components and the control arms.
Is that like the tie rods?
Well, not really the tie rods, but the control arms hold the wheels in place.
Huh.
Okay.
And in some cases, they're made out of sheet metal or steel instead of aluminum, so they're prone to corroding or rusting through. So that car in particular, I would want it on a lift and look under it. And then there's other things to be concerned with. That car, a 90 Avalon, I'm almost certain has a timing belt.
Mm-hmm.
And that's an age versus mileage thing. How many miles are on this car?
93.
If that timing belt job has never been done, it's already way overdue because of the age.
Okay.
So if you know the owner of that car and the timing belt job has not been completed, that's definitely something to factor in.
Now, we won't. Unfortunately, the owner passed away, so we'll never know.
So you don't know any history of the car as far as that goes.
Yeah, right. We know he was very fastidious about everything else in his life.
Yeah, well, a quick look will tell you, right?
I would say so, yeah.
All right, Connie, we got to take a break here, but thank you very much for the call. And the number to call is 1-800-348-2551. Gordon Fricke is our guest. It's the Car and Truck Show today, 1-800-348-2551. Back in a flash.
Support comes from Boyden & Perrin, Amherst, Massachusetts, providing foreign and domestic car, truck, and SUV repair services and a Massachusetts inspection station for over 50 years. BoydenAndPerrin.com. Weewaka Lake George, New York, an enrichment and revitalization historic lakefront retreat created by and for women since 1903. WIAWAKA.org for events. The Unitarian Universalist Congregations, with locations in the Capital Region and beyond, welcoming families who value religious diversity. CapitalRegionUU.org. Adirondack Creamery Ice Cream, crafted with local milk, cream, cane sugar, and eggs, featuring flavors such as pumpkin pie, available at Adams Ferriker Farms, ShopRite, and specialty grocers. AdirondackCreamery.com. And Quality Foreign Car Care, Ballston Spa, New York, specializing in European car sales and service for over 20 years. QFCC.com.
Vox Pop on WAMC. Gordon Fricke is our guest. 1-800-348-2551 is the telephone number. 1-800-348-2551. And we go to the phones. Who's this calling? Hello?
Hello?
Hi. This is Charlie?
Yes.
Charlie, you're on.
Yeah, okay. Thank you. Hello?
Yeah, go ahead.
Yeah, listen, I've been having a problem with a 1989 Toyota Camry. It's four-cylinder with its stalling. It'll run fine sometimes for even a day or two or more, and then suddenly you pull up the stoplight and it will stall. Now I put an OBD1 on it, and it's showing that it's the coolant temperature sensor. And my question, I have two questions actually. It probably does need to be replaced, but is that the only possible source of this problem? And secondly, is there some garage or somebody that has more sophisticated diagnostics that might be able to trace something else? That's the only code I'm getting.
All right.
Okay, yeah. I mean, you're lucky to even be getting that code on an OBD1 car, which is what yours is.
Now, what's OBD?
OBD is onboard diagnostics.
Okay.
And the first phase was OBD1, and that covered cars up to 1995.
Mm-hmm.
96, a newer call, is called OBD2. More enhanced, a lot more codes and check engine lights on like crazy. Car like this, you very seldom saw the check engine light. If you did, it was a real hard problem if that was the case. If you're getting a code for a coolant temp sensor, it's very likely that that is contributing to and could be causing the stall. Not a very expensive part. I don't know if this is something
you
can do.
Yeah, the other problems it's been having is it would surge and so on when it's idling and that. I mean, we've checked out the throttle position sensor and the mass airflow sensor.
Yep.
It's got a new cap and rotor and new wires and all that stuff.
Here's a couple things you should do in any case. That mass airflow sensor can be cleaned. There's a spray cleaner that will clean those little fine wires. The throttle plate and throttle housing itself should be cleaned. Similar spray that will, you know, years ago it was carburetor and choke cleaner, but it's not quite as powerful now because of all the plastics in there. But you'll want to clean the throttle plate and the housing that it turns in, because if there's any carbon or sludge in there, it won't let the throttle plate come to the right point, the right position where it stops.
Uh-huh.
Also, there's on your car, there's what's called an idle speed control, and some called it a control motor, some called it a valve. That diverts the air around the throttle plate to maintain an idle speed, and that's controlled by the computer, even on your car.
Okay.
And factors that will change the idle speed are temperature, loads on the engine, air conditioning on, things like that. I think what I would do is change the temp sensor, make sure the connector looks perfect, where the electrical connector plugs on, make sure there's no corrosion, the pins look great, and do those other maintenance items that we talked about. Make sure your air cleaner's good. And and then see what you get after that. You may have completely nailed the problem.
So you said it was the idle speed control?
Yeah, there's an idle speed controller that it just diverts air around the throttle plate. And you might need to get online or get a manual out to identify it, but that should be cleaned also.
Okay.
Charlie, thanks.
All right, thank you very much.
Vox Pop on WAMC. Gordon Fricke, our guest. I'm Ray Graff. 1-800-348-2551 is our telephone number. It's Bobby in Burnt Hills. You're on. Hello. Bobby.
Hi.
You're on.
Here.
Okay.
My question is, I have a 2005 Subaru Outback wagon, and I was driving it most of the summer, and towards the very end of the summer, I didn't drive it for a couple of weeks. And when I got in the car, there was a terrible, musty odor. And I thought maybe there had been a leak or something, but there isn't. And I'm sensing that it might be coming from the air conditioning system because it seems to smell more when the vents are on.
Uh-oh.
Yeah, that's not an uncommon situation that we get. And aside from any water leaks, and have you ever noticed any wetness in your on your floors after a lot of rain?
No, I have never noticed that.
Does your car have a sunroof?
No.
Okay. Sunroofs are big causes for water leakage inside the car. So ruling those items out, yes, it probably is from your air conditioning system. Mm-hmm. And what happens is, particularly on very humid summers, the air conditioner works super hard to cool the air. When it cools the air, it wrings out the moisture in the form of condensation. And that water, you'll see it dripping right on the ground underneath cars in hot weather.
Right.
And that's coming from the air conditioner. There's a drain hose or a mechanism that gets the water out. Those can partially clog or fully clog, and a lot of water can stay inside that housing. And eventually it will mold and mildew and smell. So that drain needs to, you want to make sure that drain is clear. And sometimes that's real easy. Sometimes it's harder on some cars. And then on your car, I'm pretty sure that might have a cabin air filter. And that filters the incoming air. That filter could be damp, nasty, wet, and full of leaves and junk. We see those things.
The car is stored outside, so
yeah.
It gets pine needles and leaves.
Yep. Funny you say that, because we had a car yesterday. The owner complained of a smell. This was an animal smell.
Yeah.
And we took the cabin air filter out, and little tiny mouse bodies were on, dead mice were on
wonderful.
It.
That's wonderful.
With pine needles and mold and junk and all that stuff.
Terrific.
So that needs to be changed if it has one, and then you can spray a disinfectant in the heater air conditioning housing, and that's a little more complicated. You'll need to read the instructions on the can, but I would do all of those things, and I think it might clear your odor up.
Oh, that's good.
Okay, and so the filter, how do I find out where that is?
You might find it in your owner's manual.
Okay.
Or you may have to look online. If your car has one, which most do nowadays, it'll be pretty apparent where it is, and it's a very item that needs to be replaced. People overlook those a lot, and we take them out, and they're just disgusting.
Okay. Bobby,
thanks. Thank you so much.
Yep, appreciate the call. 1-800-348-2551. Let's go to Jamie in Hudson. Jamie, you're on Vox Pop.
Hi. I was looking at buying a 99 Subaru Forester, and a guy offered it to me for $4,000, but I just looked on Kelley Blue Book and it says you should buy it for $1,300. He did rebuild the transmission, so I didn't know if that was a ripoff or if the transmission makes it worth that much.
Well, you know, those automotive guides to look up prices are just that. They're guides. They don't necessarily price every single car perfectly because no two cars are really the same. If you looked it up and you looked under Private Party, if you looked under Kelley Blue Book, that gives you a pretty good idea. Having a rebuilt transmission, if it was not just a used one that somebody put in, but if it really was a rebuilt transmission.
Whoops, okay.
Do we lose her?
That's right. You can still answer the question.
That's right. That is a big plus because, and I don't remember if she mentioned the mileage on that car. Did she, right?
No, she did not.
No, but let's say it's up there. Let's say it's over 100,000
yeah.
miles or so. If you were faced with a transmission failure at that point of a 1999 car's life,
it'd bye-bye.
Be pretty drastic.
Yeah.
To me, that's a big selling point as long as it gets investigated if it's really a rebuilt transmission.
Well, what if he didn't know how to rebuild one?
Well, I don't know. Maybe if he did it on his kitchen table.
Yeah, if I built a I rebuilt the transmission, that would not be a
you don't think
that
that'd be a selling point?
No, not really, no.
So that's what I'd be looking at.
All right, fair enough. Well, let's hope she heard that. Glenn in Woodstock. Glenn, you're on. Hello, Glenn, are you there?
I am here.
You're on.
Yes, I have a 1973 Jensen Interceptor. It has a 440 Chrysler engine in it with the same, you know, drivetrain that goes with it, the transmission. I have a carburetor problem. Actually, two problems with the carburetor. It's a four-barrel carter. Two problems. When I go around the corner, the car conks out. And the second problem is when I kick it down into passing gear, it'll only go into passing gear every so often. Like, I might have to do it 30 or 40 times. And every so often, it'll hit the passing gear, but it's not doing it the way it should.
It's possible that you've got two problems going on there at the same time. That's a Carter. Do you know if that's a Carter AFB carburetor?
Yeah.
Yeah, they're really good carburetors for that era yeah. car.
The one with the porcelain underneath it?
Pardon me? Yes. Yep.
Yeah.
It's a four barrel, correct?
Yeah.
Yeah. Carburetors can give you lots of trouble. That's a really good one. What comes to mind possibly is fuel level or float level. And you can't just determine that on the outside. There's some things you have to take apart and check. The carburetor is worth having rebuilt because it's such a good unit. You may have to have the carburetor gone through. May have to have it rebuilt, which means you're not really machining and refurbishing everything, but
right.
you're getting new gaskets and all the things inside that seal things up, and then somebody cleans all the passages and makes sure there's no corrosion in there, gets the float level set correctly, and that could answer a lot of those problems.
What about the passing gear?
Well, the passing gear, I'm pretty sure on that age car, I'm not sure if it's vacuum or if it's a mechanical linkage that goes down to the transmission. Do you know that, Glenn? If it's
I'm fairly sure it's the mechanical linkage.
Yeah.
There's a linkage that goes way down
to the transmission.
Yeah. I talked to a Chrysler guy who thought he could fix it right in the carburetor. He said some of them you can adjust here. He looked at it and he said, no, this one's adjustable by the transmission somewhere.
Yeah.
So he said,
No, and I don't know exactly on yours where that adjustment takes place, but that kickdown definitely could be out of whack, and that's why if it's not under perfect conditions, you can't get it to kick down.
Yeah.
All right.
Okay.
Glenn, thanks a lot. What is a Jensen Interceptor?
Well, we should have asked Glenn while he was still on the phone because it was I don't know if I'd call it a kit car, but it was a company that put these vehicles together, and it might have a fiberglass or a plastic body, but they use this big Chrysler running gear, this 440. So, you know, it's a pretty powerful vehicle.
I don't think I've ever seen one.
It's one of those very low production companies that put these cars together.
All right, let's go to Ivan in Kinderhook. Ivan, you're on.
Hi, thanks for taking my call.
Sure.
I got a 94 Chevy pickup with a 5-liter in it, and it starts and runs great, but it skips a little once it gets warm, and if I shut it off after it's warm, it won't restart without putting my foot right to the floor, and then it'll start and runs like it's flooded. But I know it's got a throttle body on it, so it can't really flood, I don't think. There's no vacuum leaks. I checked for that, but I'm wondering if it sounds like it might be an injector problem.
It's very possible, Ivan. So when it does, when you do get it to start after holding it to the floor, is it making the symptoms as if it was flooded? You're getting smoke and a lot of smell out of the exhaust and rough running until it clears out?
Yes, sir. Yeah. And then it runs rough and then it goes fine for... It's kind of intermittent, and it does skip at times when it's running along the road.
Mm-hmm.
But I checked for vacuum leaks. There's not that many vacuum lines on it.
Yeah.
And I was just, does it seem like, and I put sea foam through it a couple of times, and that didn't really seem to do anything.
Yep.
I'm wondering, does it sound like an injector?
It probably is, and here's a way to check that. After it's been driven or it's after it's fully warmed up, get the air cleaner off and shine a flashlight down that bore and look, and you may have to stare at it for minutes. See if you're getting drips of gasoline coming out and hitting that throttle plate.
Okay.
It's very possible that the injector, that's got two of them in there. One or both of those could be dribbling out gasoline after you shut the engine off, because the injector, the pintle, the valve that shuts the injector off is not sealing properly. So after 10, 15, 20 minutes or half hour, a whole bunch of gas has run down into the engine that you didn't want there, and that's what that flooding is. And
okay.
And since you've done the sea foam, you'll just have to replace those injectors.
Sounds good.
All right.
Thank you,
Ivan, we appreciate it very much. The number to call is 1-800-348-2551. It's Vox Pop on WAMC. Gordon Fricke is our guest once a month, and today is the day. Robin in Woodstock, you're on. Robin.
Hi. Thanks for taking my call, guys.
Sure.
I got a 2008 Toyota Tacoma, and four-cylinder. It's got great gas mileage, but I'm greedy. So when I'm going down hills, I like to coast, and I'm just wondering... Like for my house, I put it in third gear, and then I just step on the clutch and coast all the way down to town. But if I have to slow down a little, I just take my foot off the clutch and let it slow down. Am I wearing my clutch out?
Well, eventually, yes, because when you have your foot on the clutch pedal to the floor, you are pushing what's called the throwout bearing into the clutch pressure plate.
Right.
And there's some things... turning there. The throwout bearing is taking up that turning of the engine, and eventually, if you do this for a long time, you'll wear out the throwout bearing.
How long?
Well, it's hard to say, because it could take years of that before it surfaces. But I think if I was going to do a coast situation like you're doing, I'd put it in neutral.
Okay.
Let the clutch out, and then do all the coasting you want, and then when you get ready to go again, depress the clutch pedal, and then select your gear. And that's just like shifting the truck.
Right.
I think that'll be easier on it in the long run.
But it's murder on the brakes, though, yeah?
Well, what he's trying to do here is coast and get some economy out of it. I think when it comes time to putting on the brakes, then you can put it back in gear and do the normal slowdown.
Okay.
So I would try that.
Okay.
Thanks, Robin.
Yeah, thanks, guys.
Appreciate it.
Bye.
You know, back when I learned to drive stick shift way back when, they said, never ride the clutch. Never ride the clutch. Don't go halfway on the clutch.
That's what they were saying.
And what was it true?
Yeah, it'll wear stuff out prematurely. And if it was your dad's car... And you wore the clutch out.
He drove
out.
An automatic.
you're off the hook.
Well, I used to get about 90,000 to 100,000 out of my clutches, you know, before going back to automatic, which I can't believe. After 20-some-odd years of driving stick shifts, it was quite a transition going back to an automatic.
Manual shifts are getting very rare.
That's
very
too bad.
Rare.
That is a shame.
Yep.
Chad in Scotia. Chad, you're on with Gordon Fricke.
Hi, I got a 2011 Hyundai Accent, and I'm wondering what the timing belt changes and when the other changes. I appreciate you taking my call.
Sure. Hyundais were one of the last car manufacturers to—they didn't have extended timing belt at change intervals. They were still at 60,000 miles, which used to be completely normal. In some cars in the early years, when I say early years of timing belts, late 70s, early 80s, they were even more often than that. But the technology of the belts got better, and they made them bigger and heavier. And a lot of the car manufacturers now have gotten away from timing belts and they've gone back to chains.
Mm.
And what year is your car?
2011.
Do you know?
About 70,000 miles on it.
So does your car, in fact, have a timing belt still?
Yes, it does.
Okay. I think by 11, I think Hyundai increased that change interval beyond 60,000.
Okay.
What I would do is if the car has manuals, go to the owner's manual and see what they say in there.
Okay.
Because it was 60 for a long time on Hyundai's, but I think the newer ones are up to a higher change interval.
Higher.
All right.
And I had one more question.
All right, very quickly.
Clutch. How long? What's the lifespan of the clutch?
Well, Ray and I were just talking clutches, and they are very individual. A clutch can last the life of the car, depending on how it's used.
Okay.
Very individual component.
Yep. I had a Ford. I had a 90 and a half Ford Escort GT way back when. I got 100 out of it.
Out of the clutch. Yeah.
All right, let's go to a break, Mr. Zach. 1-800-348-2551. Gordon Fricke in the lightning round coming up.
Support comes from Charles Padula, DDS, Union Avenue, Schenectady. Cosmetic dentistry, including porcelain laminates, crowns, implants, and Invisalign orthodontics. PaduladDS.com. Casual Set in Stuyvesant Plaza, Albany, New York, featuring women's fashions by Eileen Fisher, Joseph Ribkoff, Comfy, Habitat, and Flax. CasualSet.com. Capcom Federal Credit Union, offering home mortgages and auto loans, checking, financial planning, and more. CapcomFCU.org. And the Arkell Museum at Canajoharie, presenting Dinotopia, The Fantastical Art of James Gurney, opening reception October 27th at 1 p.m. ArkellMuseum.org.
Hello again. That's T-Bone Walker, if you're scoring at home. 1-800-348-2551 is our number. Gordon Fricke is our guest. About 18 minutes left. Let's hit the home stretch. And Bill in Beacon. Bill, you're on.
Hi. You had talked a month or so ago about how expensive it is for independent mechanics to buy the diagnostic software and equipment and stuff.
Yes.
Is that system eventually going to make it impossible to take your car anyplace else except for the dealer?
Well, the car manufacturers, I think, try very hard to retain as many customers as they can in the service department after the warranty is over.
Yeah,
and part of the strategy is to make exclusive test equipment and very hard to figure out systems. As the technology advances with every new model year, the aftermarket ratchets up a little bit, and we keep getting more information. Every update I get has way more stuff in it. So the aftermarket and the independents are keeping up at a fairly decent pace, but it's much more difficult than it ever used to be because of all the data, all the information, and there is so much analytical thinking required now, and less maybe hands-on, or the proportion of the two has changed. And you're right. It's taking it out of the hands of the smaller guy who can't buy the $1,000 software updates, the $4,500 scan tool, you know, all that stuff. So to a degree, yes. Yeah.
So I guess I'll stop fantasizing about buying a new car.
Well,
it does add to the expense. I mean, some of the dealers are really good, and a lot of them are, you know, certainly no better than your randomly picked mechanic on the street.
Sure,
know?
Sure. Mm-hmm. A lot of what they have backing them is the factory. You know, the manufacturer,
right,
who sees all these common problems, puts them in a massive database, and they can gain that information where the independent guy really has to struggle to get that information.
Well, I mean, you would think, thanks, Bill, for the call. You would think that the internet would certainly be a leveler of that playing field when you can look up. If I have a problem, I first go to the internet and say, well, why are my door locks not working on my 2003 minivan? And they'll say, oh, just pull the accessory fuse for a moment and it resets.
In that case, it's extremely helpful. Sometimes it's counterproductive. productive because it's just like all these medical
websites. Yeah. You diagnose yourself incorrectly.
You pre-diagnose it.
Yeah.
And the guys and I will look at repair orders or people's requests in the morning, and they'll have a big list of stuff that they think might be wrong.
Well, that's cha-ching, right? Yeah, say, go ahead. You do it.
Yeah, you can't.
Oh, you do have all these problems, sir.
You got it. You got to narrow it down and try to get the symptoms instead of what they think's wrong. But you're right. It works both ways.
So do you think that the car manufacturers are actively trying to put guys like you out of business?
They want more of those cars returning to their shops for absolute sure.
Yeah.
And they have, but they've lost more than ever in the last few decades, and now they're trying really hard to get them back.
So is there a way then, trademark-wise or proprietary-wise, that you would have to buy X, Y, or Z software from X, Y, or Z manufacturer?
No, because there was a law passed in the 70s that prohibits the car manufacturers from monopolizing their products and their repairs and their parts. As long as you use parts that are as good or better, meets OEM specs, and you buy quality diagnostic equipment, you're fine.
All right, let's go back to the phones. David in Middlebury. David, you're on.
Hello.
Hello.
I've got some Michelin, I think they call them Ice X tires, winter tires.
Mm-hmm.
And I was told that the soft rubber that gives you the traction is only so deep, and that after that wears out, you're down to a hard rubber layer, which I assume is not as good.
Yeah, yep, that's true. Now, I don't know about that exact model tire that you're speaking of, but what you're saying is true. There's a lot of winter tires that the compound starts out soft and gooey, and after about half of its life, it turns into what is considered to be an all-season tire because that winter compound has worn away.
So how do I know when I would like not to have that condition?
Yes.
So how would I know when I need new tires?
The general rule is 6/32 of an inch.
6/32.
Yes. From if you are worn down to about 6/32 remaining, if you have that style tire, most of your snow tire capability is diminished, and you're on kind of an aggressive all-season compound.
Okay, and I would think that would not be as good.
It's true.
And I do a lot of winter driving.
Yeah, and when you lose that deep tread, the tire can't get as much slush and junk out of the way, and you tend to float more and don't cut through the surface. So that was a great question. You're absolutely right.
Perfect timing.
And this tire does not have an aggressive tread.
Well, you know, tread aggressiveness is not a total indicator of how good the tire performs in the winter. It's very deceiving. So
okay.
I would take a measurement of that tread.
All right.
Okay, thank you very much.
David, thank you. 1-800-348-2551. Rich in Wilton is on with Gordon Fricke.
Hi, guys.
Hi.
2001 Ford Taurus 3.0. I had a check engine light come on several weeks ago. Drivability was not affected at the time. I did get a scanner. I scanned it. It came up with a 442 code, I think it was, which was a light emissions leak somewhere.
Mm-hmm.
I reset it, cleared the codes. Everything was fine. A couple days later, the light came back on, and now there's an issue with the RPM. Whenever I'm first starting the vehicle, it'll go up to almost 1,500. It doesn't always come back down below 1,000. I can feather the accelerator a little bit. I can get it down to about 900, but then it fluctuates between 900 and 1,500. Does not affect the way that the car accelerates or anything, but the major issue I have is that the idle is staying rather high. Check engine light continually resets and with the same code. Am I looking at an IAC to repair that, do you think?
Well, maybe not. The code, was a small leak code, you said?
Yeah.
Depending on the source of that leak, if it's coming from a, like the purge, the canister purge, or one of those solenoids, they can be leaking air and or gas vapors to your intake, and that's what's causing it to idle and run rough at low RPMs or at idle speeds. So it's possible that even though most people think, oh, it's just an EVAP leak, it doesn't make any difference, some do and some don't in how the car runs.
Okay.
So I wouldn't rule out that that code could be a cause of that idle situation. What you could do is clean that idle speed controller and clean the throttle plates. Don't replace anything. And just see if that helps your unstable idle.
Can I use just like a carb cleaner to clean the throttle plates without any disassembly?
Don't use carburetor cleaner per se. Get the air intake cleaner. It's easier on all the plastic stuff. But you can buy that at any parts store.
Right, I've seen it. Okay.
Yeah.
And just spray that in there.
Clean the throttle plate. Clean that ISC controller. On your car, you can take that right off. It's very easy to unbolt and clean
it. Now, where is it located exactly on the top of this motor?
Well,
do you know offhand?
It's right near the throttle. It's right near the throttle body on the intake manifold.
Okay.
Rich, thanks.
All right, thanks, guys. Appreciate it.
Appreciate the call. Vox Pop on WAMC. Randy in Albany. Randy.
Hello.
Hi.
Hello.
Hello. You're on.
Hi. I have a 2005 Ford Explorer. I hadn't had any issues. All of a sudden, last week, I went to start my car, and the battery was dead, nothing at all. Prior to that, I had it kept saying, check your fuel cap. And I don't know when that had come up quite some time ago. I got a person to jumpstart my car, and I took it back to the place where I got the battery. They checked the battery. The battery was only half of the cold cranking amps that it was. So they replaced the battery. The code went away, and it hasn't came back on. So that's one question. Will that possibly come back at some point in time? And what do I need to look for if it does? And what are the other, like, I hear you guys talking about taking it for a belt, a timing belt and all of these other, like the transmission flushes and all of that. What are the things that should be recommended as well?
Okay, Randy, the reason your check engine light went out after the battery was changed is it, in effect, cleared your codes all out when the guys changed the battery.
It actually wasn't a check engine light. It was a check of fuel cap.
Okay, yeah.
Check your fuel cap.
Yeah, well, that check fuel cap is tied into the EVAP system, and if the gas cap wasn't put on tightly and the computer does its self-check, it says, wow, there's a giant leak here. It's so big that maybe the guy doesn't have the gas cap on tight. So what was the cap, in fact, loose?
No. Okay. No, I got out. I mean, this has been going on for a couple months now anyway, prior to this battery thing.
Yeah. Yeah, that indicates you have a large EVAP leak somewhere. And it could be the gas cap itself, the gas cap seal, or something else which needs to be diagnosed. It's very difficult to check an EVAP system without equipment. So that's going to need to be tested and scanned. The other question for your maintenance is, Explorers don't have timing belts, so that's not an issue. And the intervals for transmission changes has gone up to a higher interval now. I would go to your owner's manual, go to the maintenance section, and look it up under what's called severe driving condition.
Yeah.
That sounds way worse than it is. We've been through that a number of times, but I would follow the severe maintenance schedule. And whatever they recommend, do it, because the manufacturer does not overdo recommended maintenance. Whatever they say to do is very important.
All right.
Okay, thank you.
Randy, thanks a lot for the call. Vox Pop on WAMC, and we go to Jessica in Wappinger Falls. Jessica, you're on.
Hi, I have kind of a strange question. I have a 2005 Toyota Prius, and very recently some members of my family have been complaining whenever they ride in it that they feel car sick. As soon as, you know, we're like a minute out of the driveway, my husband when he rides in the passenger seat, my son in back in his car seat, they've been saying lately they feel car sick, and they've never complained of that before.
Are you a bad driver?
I don't think so.
Okay.
I don't think I'm riding the brakes or anything like
that.
All right.
Do you think it's...
Any thoughts?
Do they only comment when they're riding in this particular car?
Yes, although the only other car we ride in is my husband's, and then he's driving. So I don't know if it's just something he feels as a passenger and not a driver. I don't know.
Why don't you drive his truck with him and see what happens, or his car?
Ray, you beat me to it.
Oh.
That's what I would say is either switch drivers and see if anything changes, and it could be the way the way the Prius sits, rides, and drives, how the windows are. It might be specific to the vehicle. I would try to change cars and do a little test and just see if people respond differently to another driver or another vehicle. And if you knew any, if you know anybody with a Prius, try to borrow their Prius.
That's
just
a good idea.
See if it's the car that's maybe affecting the members of your family.
Does it affect you, Jessica?
No, I feel fine when I drive it. It is a very light car, though. I mean, it's an extremely light car. So I don't know if just at fast speeds they feel the motion of, you know, the car not being really solid. Not sure.
Seems like a solid car.
I just worried that it meant there was some sort of repair. Like my husband suggested maybe the shocks or something.
What year is the car?
2005. And it's got about 120,000 miles.
Well, does the car feel like it's kind of teetering around and not as firm as it used to be? Does it feel like it's a little looser and not taking bumps well?
I think the brakes are very tight. It drives smoothly. It, at high speeds, though, or if it's windy, I do feel it.
Yeah.
You know, it's a light car. It does, at high speeds, I can feel it.
It wouldn't hurt to have it checked to make sure, number one, your tire pressures are correct. And just have the shocks and struts and suspension just to make sure that the car is handling and riding the way it should. And then fool around with different drivers and see what happens.
If it doesn't affect you, is it possible that there's a psychological thing going on here where one person at one time said, you know, I feel car sick, and everybody else all of
mass
a sudden...
Mass hysteria?
Well, sort of.
Yeah, it's very possible.
Could be.
Yeah?
Mm-hmm. Could be.
Don't take
yeah.
it personally, Jessica.
Okay, thanks.
Thanks a lot for the call.
All right.
Yep. Let's get one more in here, Gordon, before we're done. Joel in Catskill. Joel, quick.
Yeah, hi. I got a 71 Bronco with a power brake system put in it. It's normal vacuum boost brakes. And I got kind of variable brakes where sometimes they feel nice and high and firm at the pedal. Other times kind of squishy and can almost bottom out. Now, I've replaced the master cylinder and the brakes have been bled out and everything. And basically none of that seemed to affect the condition at all. And it's highly variable.
So sometimes you've got a great pedal, and other times it's way low?
Very low, yeah.
Wow.
Would a bad vacuum booster result in something like that?
You had a bad booster, you would be pressing harder on the pedal to get the car to stop.
Uh-huh.
And if you're
that seems to be part of it, too.
Yeah.
But the variability is more what worries me.
It could be the booster, because the booster uses vacuum and it multiplies the force of your foot to apply the brakes.
Yeah.
What you could very carefully do, and don't take it out on the highway, but you could disconnect the vacuum from the booster and plug it and just drive it around in your driveway or somewhere where it's safe and just see if the brakes are consistently hard to operate or if it varies even with the booster out of the system. And you might be looking at a booster. I hate to tell you just to go out and replace it, but it's entirely possible.
And I'm afraid that's where we will have to leave it. Although I would say, you know, don't do that if there are any people or cars
around.
That's
what I mean. You got to be very careful to fool around with doing things like that with brakes.
All right, Joel, thanks a lot. We're out of time. And thanks to everybody who called in to talk to Gordon Fricke today. Support comes from HMT at the Spa Little Theater, presenting the musical comedy The Drowsy Chaperone, weekends through October 27th in the Saratoga Spa State Park, homemadetheater.org. Curtis Lumber, providing kitchens, baths, doors, and windows, paint, flooring, and more since 1890, with 21 locations in New York and northern Vermont, curtislumber.com. Don Muller Gallery, Northampton, Massachusetts, specializing in jewelry, custom designs, handcrafted glass, and gifts by American artists since 1978. Facebook and donmullergallery.com. At New York State Canal Corporation, operating and promoting the historic Erie Canal and New York's canal system, cruise the past, unlock the future. cruise the past, unlock the adventure, is what it says. Canals.ny.gov. Although, you know, my phrase is pretty good too. Right, Zach? Zach the engineer was at the controls today. Patrick Garrett and Blaze Bryant helped with the phones. Our web assistant, and I shouldn't call him that. He's sort of the social media dude, Tom Job. Our producer, Jessica Blaustein. Marshall, I'm Ray Graff. Tomorrow, it's Moyers and Company. Next week, it's Medical Monday at this time with nephrologist Dr. Vince Carcillo. Stay tuned for a news update.